Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Broncos fans, and welcome to the Round 7/Round 8 Whinge Fest episode of Broncos Weekly. As always, I'm Mitch, and I'm joined on the line by our good friend Simo. How you going, Simo?
Yeah, not bad. Yourself?
Mate, I'm doing okay. I am trudging along with life. It's been tough, but I'm still here. We're still here. But we're joined by our second ever guest after King Wally's public toilet escapades when he dialed in a few years ago. We've got Ben, as known Benny DTD on Twitter, has joined us. He's a diehard Broncos fan. We've met him before in Brisbane. Wanted to get on and voice his opinion and join in on the goo feasting with me and Simo. So Ben, how you going, mate?
Mate, I'm not too bad. My suburb has actually just gone back into lockdown in Melbourne. So other than that, I'm angry at the Broncos.
Yeah, what are you madder at, mate? The lockdown or the Broncos?
It's a tough one because like the lockdown originally made me super depressed just because I just literally couldn't leave the house. But as I think I said to you last week, I was miserable on Saturday, proper miserable when I was, you know, up seeing the lady and she just said, don't come around between Thursday and Sunday because you get miserable.
Oh, God. Yeah, my missus, as everyone knows, listens here, is from Russia, and she's been living in Australia this year. She's been warned by everybody about the post-Broncos depression, all my friends and whatever. But you just can't be ready for it, can you, mate? Like, when there's someone, you know, there's just, like, many of us, you know, it's like maybe a 5% of the overall NRL fan base that, like, your team losing can absolutely ruin your weekend, not for only yourself, but for the family and friends around you, hey?
Oh, it's a real thing. Like, you know, as you said, it's a sports thing. I don't know why we like sports so much, but when a club like the Broncos goes this poorly, you can't help but take it personal and make it personal for those around you. So, it's a messed up time.
It's the worst, mate, that I'm with my old man. We're living with my old man, myself and Anastasia, and he's a diehard Broncos fan too. And obviously he's the reason why I was a Broncos fan growing up. And it's like, she can't cop that every time we lose, the next 2 days is like me and Dad in the room going, you hear this? What about this Lockyer? What about Carl Boris this time? Ah, oh, you see what Paul White said? Oh.
Yeah, well, I guess the good thing about lockdown is now Amy can't come down to visit me, so I'm going to have 4 weeks of being able to punch the walls.
Yeah, mate. You can lock yourself in there, go real insane, and just go through all those Carl Morris quotes every second day and just bang your head against the wall until it stops hurting.
Yeah, the poor dog won't know what's going on, but that's for another day.
Yeah, 3.5 weeks of punching drywall, and then you got a couple of days to patch it all up before you let people back in.
Yeah, I got a long lease, so I should be sweet.
Yeah. So, Ben, you want to give us some of your background, mate? You grew up a talented footy player and a footy fan and, you know, obviously a Broncos diehard, but why don't you give us a little bit about yourself? I know these are always awkward, but it's, you know, people got to know about our guests on here.
Well, yeah, like you said, I mean, I have been a Broncos fan for my whole life. My dad was actually a Dragons fan, stemming back to the early days because they were around before the Broncos were. But, you know, once a Queensland team came in, it was a sort of easy transition for me to be a Broncos fan. And I still remember when I was 9 years old watching the you know, the 92 grand final, sitting down in the living room, and it was daytime grand finals then, and you know, we're all celebrating and flags and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, obviously a long time Broncos fan, seen all their premierships, which is fantastic, but you know, I honestly couldn't I couldn't tell you when I back then that 2006 would have been our last. I would have laughed because we are the Giants of rugby league in Australia. Like, I don't mean that. Obviously, the Roosters are doing super well at the moment, but because we're a one-team town, we have all the resources and everything like that, we shouldn't go through periods of 14 years now without a win. Obviously, we made the granny in 2015, but that was the first one since 2006 as well. So, yeah, just, you know, like I said, long-term Broncos fan, live by the club, die by the club, but obviously it's not going super well at the moment, so some sort of change needs to happen.
Yeah, mate, you're one of the few listeners that, you know, I remember you were a bit finished with Wayne at the end there, but you're also one of the few that when Seibold came on board, you weren't exactly, you know, falling for the smoke and mirrors that we somehow signed one of the world's greatest coaches that no one had seen before that. Like, you know, you definitely didn't buy into that. So you've also had the questioning of the process the whole time, me and Simo have had, definitely, hey.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, what they did to Wayne was obviously the wrong thing. And while Seibold had a fantastic year at Souths, and I was optimistic that he could do some things, you know, because we had a good side, I was optimistic that he could do some good things with it. I always wanted Wayne to have that last year, which would have been this year, and then Demetrio to take over from there, because it was ready-made relationships with the club, with the players. Wayne would have still been with the club, so he could have overseen what JD was doing. JD's obviously got a really good rapport with a lot of the players. He's got his own techniques, his own style. From all reports, he's a real tough master, which some of these young kids need. And you can obviously see in recent times and even last year that these guys are just getting absolutely filled with nonsense game plans, and that he's just trying to be too tricky, I feel. So, yeah, I was always on board for Wayne staying on with JD taking over, but I was optimistic at the same time that Seibold could actually do something with the roster, but that's proven to be false.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could have predicted, even as one of the largest Wayne fans and non-believers of Seibold, none of us could predict it going this bad. Like, you said, we are the Broncos. It doesn't happen to our club. And it's like, we can probably count the seasons on one or two hands in our, you know, sorry, in one hand, that we were embarrassed by the club through its history. And now this is 2 years in a row. Like, I went to all the away games in Sydney last year, as I do. And all of a sudden, I was rocking up the games just expecting to lose by 30. It's just not the experience of being a Broncos fan, is it?
No, not at all. And, you know, like I said, we're the powerhouse club in the NRL. It's, you know, you look at the Yankees and stuff like that in American sports, or the Dallas Cowboys, or, you know, Real Madrid, Man United, all those sorts of clubs. That's the sort of weight that the Broncos carry within the NRL. And they are languishing way, way behind in what they should be delivering.
Yeah, and really tough as well. Like, you've seen the real lack of ownership and leadership and responsibility has been the real tough part for myself. Like, when Wayne got wide-handed, obviously, I can't expect every fan who supports the club to understand the background dynamics of Brisbane and understand who's responsible for what, because not everybody knows that about any club. But it's come out over the last few weeks. Everyone's starting to understand that what Paul White's role is, what Peter Nolan's is, what Lockyer's is, what Carl Morris's is, and what roles they played in what's happened the last 3 years. And it's been so embarrassing over the last few weeks that there's not one person at this powerhouse club, you know, who on one hand are happy to take the praise when the club's doing well, like they're the world's greatest sports administrators. But on the other hand, we lose 4 or 5 games in a row, and it's just the blame game. And that feels such unlike the Brisbane Broncos of my existence, because as we both know, even if it wasn't his fault, through most of his existence, Wayne Bennett took the blame for things at Brisbane. And now, right now, nobody wants it at all. It's bizarre.
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, we've had some rough times with Wayne before, and you know, at no stage has the chairman or the CEO or anyone ever come out and, you know, played it to the public about what we're doing, what we're going through and all that sort of thing. But ever since Seibold comes on, we've had to have those guys coming out and trying to almost tell the public it's okay. I mean, I wish Brody Croft had a good passing game, like the CEO and everything are passing the buck for the blame. You know, it's been a joke, really. Like, everyone's coming out, no one's taking ownership. All of a sudden, it's going to take us 2 years to rebuild this roster that was picked for the grand final last year, and told we'd do better this year. So, I mean, yeah, it's a very confusing time.
That's it, mate. And then even yesterday, I mean, I'm glad he did it. Obviously, I want to move on. I want to move on for the Wayne Bennett stuff. I really do. But I'm glad he came out yesterday and just shat all over everything, because it just came from nowhere all of a sudden that, as Wayne said, the guys who put this process in motion and who pushed him out of the club are somehow blaming him for the situation the club is in. And it's if any self-respecting fan somehow believed that in Wayne's last year, when they were trying to get rid of him, that they were also letting Wayne sign all the contracts, you've got rocks in your head. But Wayne just simply laid out step by step, this is who does what, this is who has power at Brisbane, this is how it happened. If Seibold didn't want to go there, you know, he architected the move up there. There's all these rep players when I left, blah, blah, blah. It's no one's fault but the Broncos, which is 100% true.
It is 100% true. Like, you know, like you were saying, he just put it out there. He didn't, you know, solely push the whole blame onto anyone else. He was part of that retention committee with some of the players, and he owned that. But like he said, the whole thing about Anthony Seibold coming to take an inferior roster just would not have happened.
Yeah. Simo, you're going to say something to me?
Yeah, yeah. The whole argument when people say, oh, you know, Wayne was in charge of all the contracts and gave Darius Boyd all that. And it's like, well, for me, I don't know, people don't want to put it on like, oh, Lockyer and Morris and White or whatever, because it looks bad if they're the ones that signed all those. But if they were the ones that let Wayne Bennett do all that when they're all trying to arsehole him from the club, that's even the even worse look for them. Like,
yeah, right, 100%. If
you're running a club that way, you're just letting a guy you're trying to kick, like, fire run everything at the club still, like, you got to go. Like, that's even worse than signing some bad contracts.
100%, mate. And then, like, the whole thing how they were talking about lack of leadership and all that kind of stuff too is just hilarious. And the retention, like the recruitment issues, like they've got nothing to do with it. Even though you're like, you can Google Darren Lockyer and find out that he's actually also a leadership consultant at the club this year too. And he's out there publicly bashing, like, there's no leaders at this club and we've been left in this mess. It's like, what do you mean you've been left in this mess?
Yeah, it was interesting to hear him come out, I think it was today or yesterday, and just say, yeah, look, our retention probably has been a little bit questionable. We probably do need to look at our roster. You know, the funny thing is Ben Eichens actually said the smartest thing of everyone so far. And he said that the way our list is structured is an absolute disgrace. And I 100% agree with him, because it really is.
It is. And we've obviously covered this a bit in the past on this podcast, but the fact that, like, the distribution of funds in the first place is the biggest problem with that roster, like how we've nickeled and dimed the most key position on the field for the last few years at halfback, whilst we've also happily paid over $500,000 a year for multiple bench forwards. Like, who thought that was a good idea?
Well, I certainly didn't. I mean, yeah, you know, the fullback position, and obviously we've spoken at length over a number of times around the halfback position. And, you know, as we said, Milford does cop a lot of heat for A, not running the ball, or B, not being a game manager. And I think we spoke years ago about the Broncos needing to put the pieces in play to allow him to be the guy that they signed on that $1 million deal. You don't sign someone to a $1 million deal and then try and mold them into a player that you need. Yeah. You buy a player that you need to let that guy be the $1 million player he is.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, we've probably broken him to the point of no return on that one, though, it feels like. But,
oh, it does, I mean, feel that way.
And that's also one thing that's exhausting me too, though, mate, is that a lot of people are now wanting to sack like 15 of the players. And it's like, you can't just like, okay, go ahead and sack 15 of them, but that's not the root of the problem. It's not coincidence that almost all these guys are somehow in career worst form at the same time.
Yeah, no, I actually think the roster is solid bar, say, 4 or 5 pieces.
Yeah. 100%, mate. It's like we need a better 7, probably a better hooker, even though I like Turpin, probably a fullback. And that's just like, not great saying that in key positions, but there's nothing wrong with that pack. And, you know, maybe the back line isn't full of stars, but there's a lot of guys with potential there you can work with.
But since we've lost Hodges, like, our back line hasn't exactly been, you know, the back line of the early 90s and sort of early 2000s. Like, you know, we've had guys like Maranta and Reed and Pearson and, you know, all of these guys that are doing a job out wide, because we've had players in certain positions that can actually create everything for us. we've still got players in positions that can create everything for us. So having two gun centers isn't what we need. Katoni Staggs is going to you know, morph himself into a really good center once he actually tightens up his defense. His attack is fantastic at the moment. So we can play with the guys that we've got out wide. That's not going to be a drama. It's about the guys that can do the job in the middle of the field, a fullback that runs support play, you know, the forwards that can offload with Milford and a fullback running off them, hookers who can get guys above the ad line, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, mate, you've nailed that there. Anyway, I don't know if we want to keep covering the same track. Will we cover a few through questions? What do you reckon, Simo? Why don't we ask questions and me and Benny will answer them, but why don't you throw into Ben first as the fresh voice? Everyone's heard me bitch and moan. We'll give Ben the bitch and moan chance first, and then we'll pass it around after that.
I've got one here from Paul Mack underscore 78 on Twitter. He asked it last week after we stopped recording, but I thought it was an interesting talking point, so we'll start with that one. He said, so the 17th franchise comes in 2022. Wayne Bennett is the coach. Seibold is still fucking up the Broncos. Would you switch to a new club?
Nah, you live and die by the Broncos, no matter how bad they're going. You'd hope by then there's change. But no, I couldn't just jump ship just because Wayne's there. I mean, I've been supporting the Broncos for, you know, 30 years, so it's not going to change.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Like, you know, I've been supporting them since it's now 30 years as well. But, you know, it's not like if a new Brisbane team came in, they would represent me more than Brisbane. I was born in Milton. You know, I am a Brisbane boy from up there, and that's the team my whole family supports. And I'll stick by them. It's just tough now that you'd have to be an absolute massive change of culture or some other issue for me to jump off the Broncos. Like, I know some fans in America eventually jumped off certain teams, but it's got to do with the way ownership has behaved or similar. And it's not really possible in Australian sports for that kind of thing to happen, you know, an owner to come in with questionable morals or similar, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if Dan Snyder came in and bought the Broncos, I'd definitely consider it. But
that's it, mate.
Yeah. As is, I wouldn't leave the Broncos. But if Wayne Bennett was coaching another team, like a new franchise, it's not that you'd be support them, but kind of, you know, second team kind of thing, I'd definitely be interested to see how they go.
But if the other Brisbane team, mate, it's like that's gonna sting. If he was the head coach of the other Brisbane team and then moved into a backroom role there for the rest of his life, that'd hurt, man.
That would definitely be tough. I mean, I'm lucky. I was born in Townsville, so the Cowboys came in after I was born and after I was already, you know, indoctrinated into the Broncos. So I can easily get behind the Cowboys as I've got sort of ties up there. I've got family up there. That's where I was born and all that sort of thing. But, you know, no matter what happens, it's always going to be the Broncos.
Rightio, over on the Facebook, and we'll probably get in all of these questions, a few double-ups from previous weeks, but that's where we are at this point. Oscar Wallace, he said, should Brisbane make a play for James Mullaney? I've heard Catalans are willing to release him to save some money.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think they probably should have gone after him before he went to Catalans, you know, and have him as a one-year deal, possibly two-year deal to bring Dearden along. You know, he's a guy that obviously brings success to most teams that he actually plays with. I think he's a right asshole at training and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, at the same time, I think he would be something that would be very good for young halves to work with because he plays the game the way a lot of people need to play the game. He gets under people's skin. He's a bit of a prick, but I loved playing league with those sort of guys. Like, playing with those sort of guys really makes your team better.
Yeah.
There you go, Simo. Sorry, mate.
Oh, he's just a winner. Like, everywhere he goes, that team wins. Even when he went to the Warriors, which not many people can make that team win, but they were winning when he was there.
Yeah, for me, it's like, it's just at that point, if it was earlier, as Benny said, I'd be in favour. At this point, I don't see the purpose. It's like, I don't want to put any more roadblocks in front of Tom Dearden. For me, like, I don't want to put someone else there. If you're talking for Brody Croft, I'd do it yesterday, but yeah.
From Edge Matthews, looking at this current crop of players this year, surely now Shane Perry has to be considered a Broncos great.
I'd never not consider him a great. He won a premiership.
So from Paul John Catus, how many statements in the team song are currently accurate? So I've got the team song here in front of me.
Don't read it. It's just the first line.
Yes, that's what we are. We are the Broncos.
Yeah, that line's accurate. And then there's like, you know, we keep fighting every second. Greatest team on earth, heart of Queensland. We never stop. There's another line here later on that seems pretty accurate. I can't even see it now. I can't even read. Oh, here we go. It's talking about rugby league. It says it's the best game of all. That lines are still accurate. But apart from that, it's, you know, we're miles above and we're standing tall.
And they all hay at the end as well.
Oh, it's got maroon and gold. We're still maroon and gold sometimes. So, you know.
Give them partial credit on that one then.
Yeah, there's about 4% of that song that's still accurate. From Mark J. Clark, he wants us to let the boys know that the true fans still have their back and we all have crap days. I'm Stephen Carter. Do you guys recommend any good shows?
Okay, wait up. I resent that comment of true fans. I resent that.
Yeah, true fans doesn't mean you just give a pass to a poor performing team. True fan means you can see the team for what it is and what it needs improving to be a great team again. Because, that's a cop-out. That's for bad teams when they're just having a bad run. Like, we're a good team as a good club and we should be playing good football regardless. There's no such thing as a rebuild in Brisbane. I'll always have my team's back, but that doesn't mean I necessarily support what they are currently doing.
Yeah, no, I agree there. Stephen Carter said, do you guys recommend any good shows to binge? Thinking of starting a new show at 5:30 Saturday afternoon. I have Stan, Netflix, Amazon Prime and Disney. Thanks in advance.
Yeah, if you go to YouTube, I think you can put on loop paint drawing. So just watch that. It goes for about 10 hours.
My recommendations is always just a classic. Go watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Just skip season
Great.
One.
Cool.
Start at Great. Season two and you're laughing. Johnny O'Donnell, do the Broncos hire Kearney to help Seabold? How long do we have to wait till our useless halves and Boyd get the flick? Seems like players around them are getting dropped. Jermaine last week, now Oates before they do.
So Seabold is... Like, you know, I've heard you guys mention it before about the shuffling deck chairs and everything like that. It just seems that he wants to avoid the elephant in the room. So clearly Darris is not performing, hasn't been for 18 months. They've moved him from fullback to 5'8", back to fullback, now to center. And nothing has worked. And he's still performing as badly as he has, you know, for the last year and a half. Jermaine was a scapegoat for that. He was obviously easy to drop because he wasn't going to be the fullback at the start of the year for some random reason. Seabold wanted Bird there, which again baffles the mind. For me, Boyd's got to be dropped. Jermaine should be playing fullback. Tessie's still obviously young, so he's got to play games against men. He's got to have another full year in Q Cup to properly develop, probably even a little bit longer. I think Dearden needs to play 7 over Croft because Croft is just awful. Obviously I'm looking for Turpin to come back, but Isaac Luke has been probably our best performer in the last 2 weeks, which is insulting, you know, to most of the fans watching the game. Like, you can't be having Isaac Luke being your best player.
They haven't been able to coach it out of him yet.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, there's changes that need to be made that aren't being made, and he's making changes for players that don't really stand up for themselves because he knows he can just do it.
The thing I don't get about the Boyd one, though, is, like, that's the biggest slam dunk you'll ever see. Like, no one except Darius Boyd is going to be upset with that. Not one person. So it's just open and shut case. Like, do it.
Yeah, like, I guess you have to, you know, Seabold likes to talk about how much of an influence he has on the playing group, but he's having a shocking influence at the moment just through his actions. You know, if he speaks well and all that sort of stuff at training, have him run water.
Yeah.
You know, don't put him out on the field because he's not defending. He does not run a line as a center. And he's literally just wearing a jersey out there and doing nothing.
That's it, mate. And what you mentioned there is also a problem I had with Seibold last year, and I still have it this year, but that whole thing about he almost overvalues training. Like, you know, I know for a fact now down at the Tigers and Mike Maguire is a noted, you know, taskmaster and noted hard ass. I know that he doesn't give a shit about Joey Leilua's effort at training.
Yep.
He gets to take days off still, and he couldn't care less when he plays like he did on the weekend prior, and neither will his teammates. Seibold cares way too much about training performance.
I'm going to throw out a little humble brag here, but I'm with you with the whole Joey Leilua thing. I remember training in our Aussie squad for touch footy, and the coach told us that if we didn't make it to 10 on the beep test, we wouldn't be picked in the team. So myself and another bloke thought we'd put that to the test and pulled out at 9.8 or something like that. And he was like, nah, you're still in.
Yeah.
You know, training doesn't matter.
It doesn't, mate. It is routine and setting some form of standard. But those kind of things that Boyd does, they matter in preseason because you're not playing towards anything but getting in shape and getting ready. They don't mean shit round 8. No one cares anymore if Boyd's putting in at training.
It was like you always hear stories of like Brett Stewart, obviously his knees and everything were shot, but you know, he wouldn't train through the week. He'd just like go for swims and stuff like that, better on his joints. And then, but no one cares because he's showing up and he's playing on the weekend. And he's one of the best players in his position.
Yeah, well, Dean Young at the Dragons Premiership, you did nothing but the captain's run the whole season.
Well, they're not going to give out a trophy for us training well.
That's it. And back to the start of that question before we move on, he did ask about Kearney. And what I will say, I'm very pro Stephen Kearney as an assistant. Big fan of his as an assistant. A real good taskmaster and a hard ass and good for defense. But what it does scare me a little again, though, is we've spoken about very often on this podcast the Isaac Moses influence at this football club. And it's become more public recently with Ricky Stewart dissing it the other day. But my concern is just this week, we hear the alarm bells ringing that Seibold needs some help. As an assistant coaching staff, which is funny anyway. We should have had good assistants in the first place. But my scare is the two alarm bells that rang were two Isaac Moses clients, Stephen Kearney and Kevin Walters. And one of the other ones they just let go, Corey Parker, because he's in the Fox Sports bubble, is another one. It's like, can we get somebody who just isn't tied to that fuckwit? Just one person.
I mean, I'm not, so I'll do it. I've got just as much an idea as anyone else down there, so.
Yeah.
Righto, from David Ryland, he said, are we gluttons for punishment? Is there a way out of this shit show? It seems wherever you look, there is a violent disagreement on what to do next. These highly paid professionals seem lost on the field, which tells me that whatever is wrong happens long before they run out for kickoff. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not. You know, like I said, this is a talented roster that looks like they've been fed far too much information on what they want to do out there. Like, you can't have young kids like ours going out there trying to perform, you know, some wild game plan. Like, you know, you've watched the games. I've watched the games. We look completely rudderless and directionless out there. They are bereft of ideas of what to do. If I was coaching the Broncos, it would just be bash the middle of the field and play a little bit of ad lib footy. And that would be it for the next 6 weeks. Just all I want you to do is hold the ball for as long as you can, not give away any penalties, and just try and play off the back of some of our individual brilliance that we can have. Some offloads off TPJ, some offloads off Lodge, off Haas. We've got the pack in the middle of the field and on the edges that can create for our guys out wide. You've seen how well Katoni Staggs can play when he's running off a little bit of broken play, off an offload, off a kick, or whatever it is. All we need to do is settle it right down, make it really, really simple for these young guys to actually get themselves into their NRL careers.
Yeah, I'm with you, mate. The thing for me, and many are better rugby league mind than mine will say this, but when you're one of these ruts with young players too, I'd be pulling offense out of training altogether. I'd be saying, mate, the points will come. What we need to do is stop the other team scoring. The whole week's focus is defense. It's defense, defense, working for each other, defense. Then we get to game day, and it'll be, you know, before the game, I said, okay, well, when we had the ball, as you said, hold the pill, work the middle, but I want you to chance your arm every set or two as well. You know, if they're putting pressure in the middle on second tackle or third tackle, don't be afraid to spread it 28 from our line, you know? That kind of stuff. We're so unexpansive on our own end that we get teams bog us down with their line speed. But like I don't want to put, as you said, spend any time in the week on block plays, any new structures, anything. I'm not doing anything on attack until we hit just on game day. Tell them to just go out there and chance it on. And we have, you said, some natural talents that things will just happen for them if we can stay in games. And it happened in the times we won last year and this year. If we're going to stay in the game defensively, guys like Stags will just create something. It'll just happen.
Yeah. Right, from SJ Chapman, he said, we don't need another loser amongst us in the coaching ranks. Say no to Kearney. So this one might be more for you, Doyle. I know you've got some thoughts on Kearney.
I mean, you say loser in the ranks, but that's a head coaching gig. And I think people don't seem to understand the difference of the responsibility in those two roles. But Stephen Kearney has been an extremely successful assistant coach in his time. I mean, he was at our club as a winner in 2015 and 2016. And we were at defence, really missed him when he left. And before, but he had prior successful stints at the Storm and success as the Warriors head coach. And then, you know, won a World Cup, essentially him and Wayne working together there. He is a good assistant coach and will set standards at training. Just because he doesn't get results as a head coach does not mean he's not a good coach.
He's not the only one to have travelled to that Warriors side and that Paris side and not have results, though. Like, that's a poor reflection on his coaching ability, I think. Like I said, him and as an assistant coach can be extremely valuable to a team, especially a team full of a lot of Polynesian boys like we've got. Mm-hmm. He can be, yeah, invaluable.
I challenge guys, if you want to see a bit behind the curtain with Stephen Kearney, go watch not the Warriors 25-year documentary, but the one they did in preseason about a year or two ago. Go watch that and you'll believe a little, because I watched that and it's not that, you know, it's a club put together thing. It's always going to look good. But there's a few things in that training session, I still remember one of them that they showed. And it was just, they had, you know, just the usual scrimmage and a training. And one of the props, I can't remember which one it was now, pulled a lazy play the ball in at the scrimmage. And right after that, Stephen Kearney walks off the sideline, walks over to him and goes over to him, you know, come here. And he goes, if you do that fucking shit again, I'm going to come on that field and kick your fucking ass. He yells at him and then goes back. And it's, you know, we don't want guys spraying them all the time, but it's that's that little standards is things the Broncos are missing. We don't have that attention to detail. We don't respect possession. I want somebody, because I want it when it happens on the field, mate. When we drop the ball on tackle two, I want to go out there and scream in their faces, pick that, don't you drop that ball, I'll kick your fucking ass. Like, that's not bad for a defensive assistant coach. Rev ups and get guys sticking to detail. Might not work as a head coach all the time, might not be the world's greatest tactician, but in a real stripped back role, I believe he's a leader of men and a leader of young men, and particularly Polynesian men, as Ben said.
Especially given our discipline like problem with
100%
set restarts and also penalties conceded, like we are awful, and that comes straight down from coaching.
Yeah, and that Warriors team, notoriously poor with possession, and they probably went too far, but they led the competition in completion rate 2 years under Kearney, and they probably went a bit far with that, but at least at the core of it, they can hold on the bloody ball.
Jaden Edmonds, he said, Mitch, give us your round 8 tips.
Oh, God, they were... Oh, no, these have gone worse now. They're getting worse and worse every week, but I really want to go the Storm, but I'm going to pick the Roosters on Thursday. I really want to go the Storm without the Roosters having Radley, but the Storm missing Munster. So I think that's a bit of a bigger out considering it's Jackson Hughes in the halves. I'm going at the Raiders, obviously, over the Dragons, Eels over Cowboys, Sharks over Titans, Warriors over Broncos, Panthers over Tigers, Knights over Seagulls, and then Rabbitohs. So only picking the one upset really being the Warriors is apparently $2.70 outsiders against our rabble.
What?
That's massive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they really?
How are we $1.47? How can the Broncos be $1.50 or shorter in anything right now?
Oh, I guess they're missing RTS, so that's probably why.
But we were $1.50 before RTS was ruled out. It wasn't much different. It's shortened by 3 cents.
My gosh.
Yeah. Righto, last one on Facebook. This is a new one I have not seen before, but from Tim Kelly. He wants to try Milford at hooker.
Oh, no. God. Is that Matty Johns? No.
Could you imagine Milford having to make that many tackles?
No. No, we don't want him touching the ball to Hooker a million times a game either. He'd be gassed.
He doesn't have that good a passing game either. Like, no. You know, you want someone who can just give the ball off the ground. Like, my kingdom for Reece Robson right now.
Oh, how good he looked. And that was, by the way, the thing you say about good crisp pass. Like, that's why Isaac Luke looks so good. And that's why it's so embarrassing. It's like, oh, this guy can, like, pass in front of his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
What
mm-hmm.
a shock.
I had something I wrote down here the other day, and I've just remembered it here. And just talking about the betting, this kind of fits in as well. So you know how often when, like, say, the, you know, when the Browns went 0-16 and everyone says Alabama or Ohio could have beat them, and it's like, they never would. It would be like 80-0. But do you reckon, like, the best New South Wales or Q Cup side could beat the Broncos at the moment?
With the amount of youth in their side, I would not. It wouldn't surprise me to see them pull an upset.
Yeah, I'm a similar age, so.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we played last year's Suncoast Coast Falcons team, if they beat us. Well, yeah. That team had Nico Hines in it, and they had Harry Grant in there, and they were undefeated for most of the year till the finals. But I would, like, as you said, they probably had a higher average age than our team.
Probably better coach too.
Yeah. No.
Over on the Twitter now from JamesK_1312. How are we going to manage to butcher a try this weekend? We always seem to come up with some pretty incredible ways to fuck it up.
Oh man, I've watched Darius blow two tries where all he's had to do is catch a kick, and he's failed to actually attack the ball. Whether it's out of fear of getting hip and shouldered in the contest or whatever it may be, but we've blown the first try in a number of games this year. And it's put us straight on the back foot because it's often been a seven-tackle set that we've given away. And we'll give away a seven-tackle set, then a set restart, and then it's a try, and then we're off.
Yeah. Billy Ace, 99. Has Simo secretly been wearing his 2014 Heritage jersey for the past 5 weeks? And I haven't, but I might start this weekend. We need to make sure we lose this one.
For new listeners of other fan bases, that's Simo's bad luck jersey.
I had, I've never worn it on a game day that we won. And then the last time I wore it, Corey Parker, it was like midweek and Corey Parker announced his retirement that day. And that was back when we loved Corey Parker. So it was sad at the time, but now it doesn't seem so bad. never_trendy_. You are now the CEO of the Broncos. Congratulations, I guess. What are your moves?
Do you want me to take this one first?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, obviously I am completely, you know, getting rid of the existing board. They have to go. Decisions they've made in the last, you know, 4 years especially have been absolutely terrible. Getting rid of the coach because he's obviously not done his job. And then getting rid of a couple of the bad contracts that we had on the books. First thing I'll be doing is actually trying to get Craig Bellamy to move to Queensland. I'll be spending the highest number that we can under the coaching cap and saying, mate, come back home. We know you like Queensland. You're going to be our coach because we obviously know Bennett's not going to come back, but Craig Bellamy could be wishful thinking. It's literally just going to be get some experienced guys in. I'll be going hard after Luke Keary to play six, and I'll also be going after Dale Finucane to play 13. And I haven't really thought about too many other sort of shakeups in the side. I think we can get away with a couple of, you know, minor tweaks here and there, but we definitely need some experience, and Keary and Finucane, I think, would provide, you know, the backs and the forwards with one really clear head to help get them through.
Yeah, me and you have dreamed of Finucane for a few years now, I think. for me, a couple of things I'd do is, the first one I'd do is take, well, after, obviously the sackings you said, I'd follow all those, but the first action I'd really take myself is wrestle the power at the club back from the playing group and do that kind of what the Raiders have done with some of theirs. Some of those, sometimes a player says he wants to test the market, I say, good luck to you.
Yeah, go for it.
We bend over for way too many players and a lot of the players don't deserve it. You know, the ones I bend over for are like Haas and Fifita and our roster. The rest of them, go ahead and test the market if you think you're worth more. All the other ones, go ahead. We'll replace you with the Broncos. But going back to what the Broncos were, people ask to play for us. We don't ask you to play for us. People come to me and say, I want to play for the Broncos. I don't call you. You call me. That's what the Broncos used to be like.
We need to treat it like an internship and tell them that it's an honour to play for us.
That's it, mate. And they're doing it free as well.
My answer would be pretty similar to Corey Goetz here. He just said quit immediately. to go do anything else.
That's it, mate. But what else would I do? I think that's one thing is really wrestling, because we do have that problem with our club, with our culture, that the player control in terms, and their managers had their way without us at the negotiation table. You just can't have that anymore. Like, we need to be more flexible because of that. Like, we are the Broncos, and I know we're in a bad spot right now, but we should be able to go sign a Luke Keary or a Harry Grant, who's someone I'd love to have, or a Brandon Smith if Harry Grant's not going to come. But we are so fucked by giving players long contracts and player options that we can't even think about in 2 years we're going to go and recruit this player.
Yeah, and a lot gets said about, like, you know, obviously Talas talks about the old boys a lot and all that sort of thing, but there is a select few guys that should be back at the club. Like, you know, you look at your Sivanasivas and Webkeys and those sort of players, I think they're really crucial to the young kids coming through the club. Like, they took less money because they knew what the Broncos could do for them as people, and, you know, especially post-career as well. Like, the Broncos isn't necessarily just about playing rugby league in Brisbane. If you're a good Bronco, you get looked after throughout the city and then after your career is done. And a lot of the young guys probably aren't really seeing that because they haven't had those guys coming in and telling them their responsibilities and their roles and all that sort of stuff of playing with the Broncos, because it's a big thing. Like I said, we are the one team town. We're the biggest brand in rugby league, and they should be respectful of that. And that's not happening at the moment.
Yeah, mate, I think you've nailed that there too. It's like, you look after us during your career and take a bit less to play for Brisbane, and the city will look after you after your career. I mean, just look at bloody the guys like Webke and Petro and all those guys I respect, but just go look at Sam Thaiday and how talentless he is and the job he's in. If he wasn't a Bronco, he ain't doing what he's doing right now.
Righto. From Corey Goetz here, he's got a couple. He said, he's dropping a winger for a bloke who just got dropped for the Harvard move we've all been missing these weeks?
I think we've been in depth on that one, and that's a comprehensive, absolutely. He's made the right call.
It's funny. The start of this year, me and Timo, we went through the roster on one of these episodes, and I went through, we've got way too many backs. We've got like 15 backs out of the 30. Well, it looks like we're going to have to play all of them bar Jordan Kahu pretty much at this point. Kenar's going to play in the next 2 weeks, no doubt.
I mean, I'd take Jordan Kahu right now.
God.
From Corey Goetz again, he said, should I stop sending death threats to the players, or do I double down now that I've got their attention? From Thursday Night FB, it seems unfair to me that K. Morris attracts more heat than P. White, given A, he's a non-executive chairman, and B, White has been around for much longer. Thoughts?
Well, I think Morris has been the one who's overseen the shocking decline of the club. Like, White was obviously here when we were somewhat successful, but Morris started in 2018, I think, and within 12 months, he's already let Wayne Bennett go and created this whole divide within, you know, the club that we currently see now. So, I mean, Carl Morris has really got to take on a lot of responsibility for how this has all panned out.
100%, mate. Go listen, read anything he says about rugby league, and you tell me if you think he's got a goddamn clue what he's doing. He might be a very smart stockbroker. He might be a good family man. He might be all those things. I couldn't give two fucks.
He might be a pedophile.
A 100% of his stint at the Broncos has been terrible. But I think another thing too, why people have, I think people in the past went harder at White, but now everyone's just assuming he's going. So kind of people are like, yeah, I can trash someone else now. So I think that also plays into it.
Yeah, 100%. And like you said, and a lot of people have come out, it's come out publicly that Carl Morris was in charge of that Wayne Bennett move and all that kind of thing. And, you know, not an executive chairman, but like it or not, his stint directly coincides with this massive nosedive. And again, every time he talks, it doesn't sound like the guy's the chairman of a board to me. It just does not.
Yeah, I'm never inspired by him. D. Darrinson. Where will we finish on the ladder? Thought we might scrape into the eighth spot a few weeks ago, but the Titans' loss has me shook. Are we on for a bottom four finish?
I reckon we're going to finish between 10th and 12th.
We have a pretty tough draw from here. And I did laugh at the club saying we went 2-5 the start of the first seven rounds last year. That's our aim again to make the finals. Well, good luck in a 20-round season. But I do think we'll probably finish between that, you know, maybe 11th to 14th. I'm a little lower than that to me. You know, we've still got to play the Storm, Bunnies, Raiders, Roosters, Panthers, Eels in our run. Like, most of our games left are pretty tough.
We might not win another game this year.
Yeah.
So we've got, what is it, Warriors now, then Bulldogs and Tigers. So say, like, optimistically, we win two of those three. And then, you said, all those teams then coming up after that. Like, if it's as bad as we look now, I honestly don't know if Seabold survives or makes next season.
I don't think he can. I actually said, you know, after we'd lost four in a row, yes, we had played some good teams. Probably shouldn't have lost the Manly game. But if this next 4 weeks of the Titans, Warriors, Tigers and Bulldogs, if we went through that period 2-2, he should get the bullet. Because they're four games the Broncos can't lose, and we've already lost one of them.
That's it, mate. And it looked like a give up on the coach game, the Titans one did.
Yep.
Yeah.
And one thing you mentioned there, Simo, I don't think, like, if we finish 12th or lower, he is not the coach to start of next season. Like, I know there's rumours of clauses in his contract or similar, that this team will not go into that season without having happened.
There's got to be, like, when Moyes took over United, there was clauses about not making Champions Leagues and stuff. Like, there's got to be clauses in his contract, right?
Yeah. But it's like, mate, like, it's one of those things. This club, I know there's a coaching cap and he's on $1 million a year, but this is a club that can stand to lose a lot more than $1 million a year if they stop making finals football.
Yeah, absolutely. The Broncos, they're not going to struggle to pay that out if there is no clause and worse comes to worse, he's gone. He's gone regardless.
Your mate Mitch, big NRL big, he said it's no question he's really excited. _Mert1, the club is now about to embark on a second club review in 8 games after the Para finals game, and now why are they being so stubborn and what are we not being told about this supposed salary cap mess?
I don't think it's we're not being told anything. It's the club are just trying to save face for the incredible mess that they've backed themselves into. Like, The way that we've gone, the coach isn't who they thought they were. He can't get the players to play for him, and he's got no clear direction on what the club or the team wants to actually achieve on the field. Like, Blind Freddy can see that the last 5 weeks we haven't run any sort of plays that make you think, oh, that's what we're actually trying to achieve throughout the game. It's literally helter-skelter out there, and all this talk from the board and Morris and White and everything like that, they're just trying to save face, trying to save their own ass because they're embarrassed about the decision they've made.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate. And after the last review, as I did mention earlier, but one of the decisions they made was to, on effective January 1, they engaged Darren Lockyer to provide leadership consultancy services to the football department for a 2-year period. It was, so the resolution to the last review was to give more responsibility to somebody who was responsible for what they were doing last time. So, won't be shocked if the next review results in Paul White being extended a year.
Makes Seabold a mega coach. He just does more of nothing. Starts at 4:30 in the morning. Pythago NRL. New looked okay at fullback except the errors. So should Seabold move Darius or Milford there next?
Well, that's a good question. I'd probably move Milf because Darius can't be moved from that left centre spot. He's the rock out there.
I don't think we asked Payne Haas to do enough. I think we should move Payne Haas back there.
Well, he's our best cover defender, so why not?
Follow-up question from Pythago NRL. Is there a 12-year-old we could promote from the junior ranks?
Not that I've seen, but I'm sure that we've got somewhere, you know, one playing for Logan Brothers or something like that. So I'm sure that Seabold can find someone.
This is a good one from the Sean Chand. If Siebes and White had a barbecue at their respective houses, what are the players ordering with their Macca's cards before they head around to Payne Haas's?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, for me, it's hotcakes because they're all still kids.
Oh, God. Happy meals.
righto, from Buddha in ya.
Oh, God.
If you had to be caught in a Broncos jersey or tongue kissing your sister, would you use a breath mint first?
Wait up. If I'd rather be caught doing one or other, oh God.
Well, I'm wearing a Diamonds jersey right now because it's comfy. So, Maddie McPee 25 asks if I ever expected this podcast to be the one that covered my worst team I support, and that's a no. I never thought that would happen. Regularly wrong. Outside of sacking of Seabold, Boyd, and the CEO, what are the three things you would do if you were on the board? Probably covered that.
Yeah, they're pretty much the first things, really.
Dan Bland, 56. I remember the days of Nicarima at halfback fondly now.
See, this is a funny one because I think we were talking about it the other day. Like, Nicarima was never the seven that we wanted either. It's just that he was the best of a bad bunch. You know, like, again, it was the square peg in a round hole type thing. And we never wanted Nicarima as a long-term 5'8", halfback. He was always the 14 that we wanted him to play, but we didn't have that seven because of the Hunt bungle and also then losing Ash Taylor. Like, that was the biggest mistake that the club made, was letting Hunt go, thinking that Ash will just stay on. And then once he left, we were in a bit of trouble because we had no actual halfback to fall back on. And I think that sort of moment there has really sort of led to a bunch of bad decisions by the club in their retention strategy. So,
yeah, 100%, mate. Like, Nicarima, and I said at the time, I didn't want him as our halfback, but there was one halfback starting in the NRL I wanted less than him, and that was Brody Croft. And, like, it's not that – I think Nico is a talented guy, but it just wasn't the right fit with Milford as our seven. You know, like, he's playing more of a six at the Warriors, and it's doing wonders for him with his running game. Defense is still terrible, mind, but he wasn't the long-term answer. We wanted an answer. And I think that's been the toughest pill to swallow is, like, as you said, we lost Taylor, then we lost Hunt, and we put this stopgap in at Nicarima, but the response has been not to go out and sign, like you said, maybe a Luke Keary, even though he's not truly a seven, but it's not been that. It's to, oh, well, maybe this Brody Croft guy will be it. Maybe. Maybe he's the guy. And it really worries you. That's what their talent identification is that Brody Croft is the answer to any one of our questions.
Yeah, when they start looking at Brody Croft, who was dumped from a Storm side, and the Storm are clearly happy to let him go, you're probably not going after the right guy. Like, I think, Mitch, you and I have talked about how much we wanted Jake Clifford rather than Brody Croft, and you could have got him on far less money, and he's a far better player. Like, just watching him on the weekend when they played the Knights,
so his good.
His kicking to Felt is on the try line every time. Croft kicking to Coates is kicking 10, 15 metres out and then relying on an offload and then hopefully Stags to do something decent.
The one kicking in on the try line, Coates scored off of it.
Yeah. But just watching Clifford run that Cowboys side around, you know, he's just unassuming but does everything well. Croft is unassuming and does everything poorly.
I love Clifford, mate, and it's a tragedy. And it's the same thing, mate, when I see guys like Harry Grant not playing for the Broncos after not having Cam Smith for 15 years. We've got to watch Brody Croft play for the Broncos while guys like Jake Clifford play elsewhere, who are young Queenslanders as well.
Righto, another one from Dan Bland, 56, said, surely Dean has to play halfback now. Also, I feel like our long-term fullback is a guy coming through the system now called Reece Walsh. What do you guys think?
You can probably speak more to the fullback sitch, Mitch, but I think Dearden should be starting at seven. That's a no-brainer for me. Croft is awful, and I hope we get rid of his contract in the next 45 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like Croft is in the same boat as Darius for Seabold, that he's going to die on that island and go down with that ship. But I don't know why. But I feel like he's still signed for another 2 years after this year, but his contract isn't huge. That, you know, if I was a new coach, he'd never see the field again if I came into the club. Dearden, obvious to anyone with eyes that he should be starting over Croft, but he isn't. I don't know why. And I mean, even on the weekend when he ran that Shepherd, at least he could throw a pass that was more than 4 meters that was accurate, because Croft can't do that. As for the fullback, man, I'm kind of sick of thinking about the next guy is going to be the next thing at Brisbane. I'm kind of really sick of that. So I hope Reece Walsh one day becomes a special talent, but I don't give a fuck at the moment about him being the next Broncos fullback, because we've already got two other next Broncos fullbacks in the team right now. And I don't care. If a fullback was available on the market or I know is good right now, I'll sign him and worry about the young fellas later.
Yeah, I still want Asako to be the fullback, but I don't know. I think that's about just me at this point on that island.
No, I'm with you too. He's done a good job. Asako should have never been dropped. His 5 games at the back have been better than anything that Boyd produced last year. He attacks the ball. I don't think he's really made any errors as such, like, you know, fielding bombs and that sort of thing. He's done a very, very good job as a fullback. It's the rest of the team that has not been doing their part of the job.
That's what makes it hard. It's just like everybody, the whole side is just so bad. I don't think you can actually get a good look at someone like Asako, because I think if you put him in any other side where they had, you know, forwards making offloads and you needed a support playing fullback and Asako could play that, I think you would see a much better player than what people are looking at and then like going and ranting on Facebook about.
Mate, I'm sick of people thinking he hasn't got any talent. The Roosters wanted him last year, for Christ's sake, and you think he's got no talent. Like, he's got bags of talent, and yes, he's made some mistakes and he's learning, but he was pretty good at fullback there. And then you put Tessie Nui in that situation where he's only thrown to the Wolves himself. Like, Tessie, I'm a big fan of his talent. He's got bags of talent, but he's kind of undersized to be playing fullback in the NRL right now. And if he's going to play NRL games, centre, if there's an injury, I thought was okay. But, like, pretty much should be playing reserve grade if there is none now, doing what we did in, like, Lockie's first year of his career. When the team was doing well, he was on the bench, he'd play 15, 20 minutes.
You know, just don't replace the fullback with him.
No, you put him on there and just let him run around. Like, that, we just seem to do fullback for fullback subs, hey, without the bench utility. He's the only coach I see who just does direct swap with someone else.
Yeah, remember he took off Arthurs the other week just to take him off?
Yes, put another winger on. Like, just, okay.
righto, Liam Patrick, 1993. Which course did Seabold study at Harvard?
God, it's some coaching course. It actually is. Like, he just did like me or you could do that course. One of those things you pay for it and you go there for like a week and get a certificate. I forget what it was called. It was like a leadership or a coaching course you did there.
I think I've done a level one coaching course, so maybe I can... Maybe I can take over.
Doesn't quite have the ring, say, though, saying, oh, I did TAFE in, like, South Brisbane. Not quite the Harvard ring to that name. Great_Nehemiah. Has Seabold lost the plane group to the point of no return? Also, thoughts on Lockie's youth policy?
I don't even know if it's he's lost the plane group. I think it's just he's confused the absolute buggery out of them. And they just don't know what he actually wants, because he probably has a shocking way of speaking to kids. You know, it's almost like the kids these days attitude from him. He can't really relate to them. He thinks he's too smart for his own good, and the kids are just like, what are you talking about, man? We're playing rugby league.
Yeah.
Okay, I've got a quote here for you just based on the last question. It says, he will spend time at Google and the New York Jets, but the most valuable part of his US trip will be the 2 days he spends at Harvard, where he will take part in a $3,400 course titled Building More Effective Teams.
Well, there he's done that.
And Port Adelaide development coach Aaron Greaves has done it as well, and he's just still a development coach. Oh, well. and that question just then... Oh, God, I lost my train of thought. What was the question again? I had an answer.
Has he lost the playing group?
Yes. Okay. In my work, I'm lucky enough myself to meet a lot of guys in footy who have worked in... I work with guys who still work there, and people have worked at clubs and have been around the traps and similar. And I'm not going to name names or say who told me this, but I was speaking to one of them after the game, who's a guy who'd been around the club before, and he said to me, I would have locked him out of the dressing room after the Titans game. He's lost that group and he's never getting it back.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense.
Imagine the news if that happened. Like, if the game ended and then 16 of the players sprint off the pitch and lock Darius Boyd and Anthony Seabold out of the dressing room. Oh, I hope he stayed busy.
It'd be great.
Just on, though, Port Adelaide, Doyle, they're top of the ladder right now in the AFL, undefeated.
Oh, no.
Granted, being a Melbourneite now, They have played the four easiest teams, I think.
Oh, mate, it's a tragedy, you know that. It's a real tragedy.
That's all right. The Suns have versed, I think, the same four easy teams, and we've won three, second on the
ladder. Yeah, Suns are second.
It's beautiful sailing. I'm going to boot up Suns Central again. We'll get that podcast going. Talk about a winning team. Righto, last one here from Errol on Toast. If contracts weren't a factor, which two players would you poach to improve our club?
Well, I think we mentioned it earlier, like Kiri would be one, and I'd definitely go after Dal Finucane as well. I mean, I absolutely love the way Finucane plays. He is no nonsense. He's through the middle, can play a little bit with the ball, defends, knows how to be good on the rugby league field. And, you know, we've all seen what Kiri's done the last couple of years. Like, that kid is now one of the top couple of halves in the game. You know, they're the two that I would really like to go after. Can't really think of anyone else at the moment, just off the top of my head. But yeah, definitely those two.
Doyle. Well, I've got two, mate. So one of them, as we mentioned before, that he's wanted to play at the club in the past. And he's one of the best, if not the best player in the game currently. But it's James Tedesco. Comes in and plays fullback. And controversially, I'm not picking a half. Because if I'm running the joint, we're just starting Dude and Milford. But I'm taking Harry Grant. I want him for a decade. That's who I'm taking, my other one. I want a hooker. I want someone. He can be the fulcrum of the team. And then we'll see what happens on Milford on the back of that.
Well, you see what he's done at the Tigers. He's almost, you know, not so much taken Luke Brooks out of the game, but he's doing a lot more of the creative stuff around the middle. And Brooks and Reynolds are both just sort of running off what he creates. And
it's so good.
Yeah, I'd love to have Harry Grant at the side. He'd be amazing. And yeah, I'd definitely have him as well.
I also am not taking a half. I had Harry Grant written down as a third option, but I'll go my other two. Jason Tamalolo, I'm taking him. And as a slightly different one, we'll go 2 years of Cam Smith, and then I'll make him my coach after that.
I like the Tamalolo one, mate. Like, our pack just having him, Haas.
We're just getting every 80-minute prop, everyone that can play 80 minutes and is like runs for 300 metres a game. Just get them all.
I like it.
Mate, other teams aren't making metres if we've got all the props, so. And then we get Willie Mason as well, so every game we can be like, where's all your props gone? Right, that was the last one. I don't know if we want to talk about this other game. It's already an hour, but
do you have anything you want to say before about the Warriors game, Benny? Any expectations, mate?
Oh, look, I'm expecting. Well, before I heard Roger was out, I was really expecting us to lose because there's just no energy in the performance at all. As soon as they're put on the back foot, they roll over. And that obviously shows that they're not playing for the coach. But given Rogers out, I don't know, maybe we can put 60 minutes together that might be able to get enough points to actually beat these guys. It's not like they're scoring an abundance of points. So this could be a 14-8 scoreline.
Jared Beal's coming back to finish the Broncos off properly.
Oh, God. I am actually very rarely afraid of Cody Nikorima, but as a revenge game.
Oh, revenge game.
I know you say also the Warriors haven't been scoring lots of points, but they also haven't been given 38 repeat sets every week so far, you know, and that's going to happen here. So Cody Nikorima, he's going to score a hat-trick himself.
We're conceding 30 a game, so, I mean, we're in deep shit.
That's what I mean. We're going to give them a heap of repeat sets and they'll get multiple sets on our line. Cody's going to score for sure.
You mentioned that. And here's this a funny quote that came out. We're recording and I've been sent it to us during recording. And this is from Seabold just today. He says, it's almost like we were guinea pigs for the first couple of weeks. We're always the first game of the round. We're really competitive against the Eels, but there's been a number of times we gave away six again. The next week, the referee was really heavy around policing the 10. It's about adjusting to that. As a coach, you've got to take responsibility, but the players can only also help themselves. But essentially, he's saying we've been getting dudded by the referees now, apparently. With the guinea pigs,
actually,
boys.
That's one thing that I really wanted to point out throughout this whole five-loss, you know, run that we've been going on. He's talked about, we haven't adjusted to the new rules and we haven't adjusted to this. I'm like, mate, that's 100% on your coaching then. If you can't get across to your playing group that giving away repeat sets is going to tire you out defensively, leading to an abundance of points being scored against you and therefore losing the game, then you're not doing your fucking job properly.
That was always the worst. No other coach is saying the same things, mate. As you said, it's like, that is your job. And you're out there admitting that you can't do that part of your job. And what, it's not your fault?
That's your whole job, mate, is to teach them these new rules. You knew they were coming.
Even in that quote you just had then, Doyle, he said we're competitive against the Eels. We lost 34-6. Like, in what world is that competitive?
Well, remember, we had our best effective contact when we lost by 30 against the Rabbitohs last year, so who knows?
Well, that's competitive compared to a 58-0 thrashing that they gave us the time before.
It's competitive to our other games this year.
Yeah.
Ugh. Cool. Well, it's been fun.
Yeah, I think that's it. Thanks for coming on, Benny, mate. Any parting words, any last slashes at the club or...
I'm never taking shots at the club. I just some of the people that are currently employed by the club is, I've got my beefs with. But, you know, I'll always stand by them and I'll always support them. I'll get frustrated as shit and cranky at, you know, everyone around me when they lose. But, fingers crossed we can actually... You know, I don't necessarily want to win against the Warriors because it's bad for business, but I still don't want to, you know, feel like I want to hang myself. So it's a tough position to be in right now, you know. Back in isolation, I don't know if I can cope with a loss by myself.
It's a lose-lose, isn't it, mate?
It's terrible.
Send us a message if you need the hand, mate. You need someone to chat to.
But no, nothing further on the game upcoming and, you know, the games after that. There are three games we should win, but, I remember we should have beaten the Bulldogs last year. Where it was like a rub your hand together game. We're going to have a good win here, boys, and we got absolutely thrashed. So it could be another one of those weeks.
Yeah, I just know if we give away the first, like, two penalties, we've lost. That's what happens every other week. So if that happens, I'll just, may as well pack it up and go to bed early.
I'll be drinking straight whiskey, so...
I don't think we'll be able to compete against a side that's not going to make an error. They'll drop the ball twice all game, and that's just going to do us in.
100%, mate. Oh, tough. Okay, anyway, let's get out of here, boys. So, anyway, thanks for joining us again, Benny.
No worries, bro. See you later, everyone.
See ya.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.